This is the Wednesday, February 10th, 2021 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Keelan. Can you please call the roll?
Good morning. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. The city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your flexibility, patience, and understanding as we manage through this challenging situation to conduct the city's business. And now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the meeting, the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you very much. First up is communications. Keelan, item number 81, our first individual, please.
Request of Janet Hawkins to address council regarding Fund Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc. to serve Southwest Portland Neighborhood Association.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. My name is Janet Hawkins, and I'm Board Secretary for Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc., SWNI, and I'm past chair of the Hayhurst Neighborhood Association and have been a volunteer with SWNI for over 10 years. Commissioner Hardesty presented at our January 2021 board meeting, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, and provided us with information on her new council leadership assignment with the Office of Community and Civic Life. The commissioner was clear that the relationship between the city and its neighborhoods will be changing in the future. We had a great discussion around those potential for planning, and she was very forthright, Commissioner, thank you, with her comments. Our board appreciated Commissioner Hardesty's willingness to share this information, as well as listen and reflect on SWNI's concerns about its relationship with the city. Last week, SWNI sent a list of actions to council and the commissioners that will undertake in anticipation of a city decision to restore funding to our fiscal year 2021 contract. Our board of directors submitted this 10-point plan document to outline our resolve for implementing organizational change and to underscore our commitment to important items like fiscal responsibility, equity and inclusion, collaboration, and communication. We are making a commitment to the City of Portland to fulfill our responsibilities as a district coalition office and renew our efforts to build a productive relationship with the Office of Civic Life. SWNI is currently operating as largely as a volunteer-run organization due to staff layoffs. Those occurred in mid-January, and at that time we lost our longtime executive director as well as a number of other staff. We're currently employing our bookkeeper on a very part-time basis because we want to maintain our financial responsibilities and basically work to raise some nonprofit funds to keep the organization going. But despite the limitations in staffing, SWNY's 7 committees and 17 neighborhood associations are meeting regularly to connect with neighbors, their neighbors with city bureaus, engage with the city and its regional planning efforts, and to share needed community information. Restoration of our contract funds for the current fiscal year will enable us to employ staff to support our volunteer work on important community issues like transportation, land use, and public safety. Looking forward, SWNY's goal is to apply for a contract with the city for fiscal year 21-22, so we can afford to employ staff to conduct our daily operations and allow our volunteers to effectively serve their neighborhoods. Our 10-point plan reflects this focus and outlines steps to restore a productive working relationship with the city in key areas: fiscal responsibility, transparency, equity and inclusion, communications, collaborations, and staff and implementing staff reductions. Finally, we're confident that SWNY can contribute to a city-initiated change process involving its current neighborhood system. We have a 40-year history of successful community involvement, as well as the capacity to reach new, diverse voices in working toward a community goal of community transformation. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you. Thank you for the update. That was perfectly timed at 3 minutes. Thank you for being here this morning. Next individual, please.
82, request of Will Mespelt to address council regarding houselessness and the Peninsula Crossing Trail.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, City Council, Mr. Mayor. My name is Will Mespelt. I live and work in North Portland. I'm here today to advocate for immediate and desperately needed change to the Peninsula Crossing Trail. I want to bring your attention to a few of many things that need to be addressed. First, the worsening conditions for the whole community. Second, I'll discuss the lack of real trying by local officials to resolve any issues accompanied by unending excuses. And finally, I intend to urge you as the elected leaders to find it in yourselves to visit the trail, see the impact, and to put your heads down to implement a solution to help end the dreadful situation we currently have. The conditions are wholly unacceptable. The destruction and sadness present at the PCT is beyond description. The images I've brought today do not do it justice. I manage an apartment community that shares property lines with the trail and over 45 tents, campsites, and many residents. In my manager's log, I have over 60 entries related to safety issues and reports due to the camping on the trail. I've been confronted by campers multiple times and even followed back to the property to be confronted again. The neighboring community recently had a fire caused by campers on the trail, and they have a video showing the residents putting out the fires with pots and pans from their windows. You'll see an image here of another fire. That's the one showing right now. And that one happened recently as well. This one's actually from the city. And as they filter through the other images, they're all ones that I've taken. A local shop owner had told me that the camp on the trail is making everyone in our neighborhood miserable, and even more so for the campers. The large camp is a huge issue of safety, negative economic impact, disparity in treatment from the city, and most of all, is not compassionate to simply allow the camps to remain. The people living on the trail are federal neighbors and citizens, and they do deserve better treatment. As a resident of this city, the most frustrating aspect of the whole situation is the general disregard for local laws by the people who are intended to enforce them. City officials, police officers, rangers, etc. They all do the same song and dance about how they can't do anything about it, blame another agency or COVID-19, or tell me to call somebody else. There are no advocates for our community, and all our concerns seem to fall on deaf ears, and it is truly miserable. What's clear from all the different people in the government that I've spoken with is that their hands are tied by somebody higher up, and they will not say who that is, which is why I finally decided to address you now. The only people left who cannot pass the buck are each here. So I urge each of you as much as I can to please try implement something, anything to resolve this catastrophic situation. Don't be afraid to try to solve this problem. The person who gets something done to resolve homelessness crisis in this city will be a hero. We will replace the elk statue with a beautiful bust of you, and I will personally campaign for that to happen. Come see the trail, see the impact, and resolve to be the ones who do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for the photos that underscore the urgency of the crisis that's taking place on our streets now. And I want you to know that this council just had a work session where we prioritized homelessness as a key component of this. And we've had a number of discussions and agreements around making sure we address the urgent emergency situation that's on the streets. And you've depicted that. And I want to assure you that we are working on all cylinders to make that happen. So thank you for coming here and underscoring the emergency situation that we are determined to address well. Thank you. First time certain item, actually we can't get to the time certain. Let's do the consent agenda first, please. Please call the roll. Well, actually, has anything been yanked off of the consent agenda?
No, we've had no requests.
Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Before I cast my vote, I'd like to just say a few words on item 84 on the consent agenda, because it's a grant application and it's for a really impressive project. The project would install solar power and power storage at the East Portland Community Center. It's a tangible step towards making East Portland Community Center a resource the community can rely on in a disaster, even when power is completely out. EPCC is already used as a socially distanced houseless shelter, winter weather shelter, and Meals on Wheels kitchen. Backup power makes it an even more valuable emergency resource for the community. The emergency power source we're proposing, solar with battery backup, means that we won't be relying instead on dirty diesel generators. And finally, the project will build resilient, low-carbon infrastructure. It's a partnership between the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management and the Parks Bureau, because we know that in any emergency, or even in the planning for any emergency, the whole city is in it together. And this is one example of bureaus working well in a collaborative manner to address multiple issues simultaneously in what I think is a really creative way. So I want to acknowledge their leadership. I vote aye. The consent agenda is adopted. Let's go to procurement report 87, please.
Accept bid of $1,921,557 from Just Bucket Excavating, Inc. for the Connected Collie Project.
Colleagues, this is a procurement report for Portland Bureau of Transportation Construction Project, the Connected Collie Project. The Connected Collie Project is a federal aid transportation project. It will provide accessible sidewalk, driveway connections, curb ramps, and pedestrian crossing improvements on Northeast Killingsworth and Northeast Prescott Streets between Northeast 42nd and Northeast 60th Avenue. Interim Chief Procurement Officer Kathleen Brennis-Morua is here to present this report. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Kathleen Brennis-Morua, the Interim Chief Procurement Officer, and I'm here to recommend authorization to enter into a contract with Just Bucket Excavating Incorporated for construction of the Connected Collie Project. On July 8th, 2020, Council authorized procurement services to solicit and award a contract with an engineer's estimated cost range of between $2 million and $5 million. We issued an invitation to bid on October 9th and received 9 responsive bids on November 5th. The responsive low bid is from Just Bucket Excavating in the amount of $1,921,557. This project is funded by the Federal Highway Administration under an agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation, an agreement that was approved by Council in 2017. The agreement allows the city to follow its own procurement rules for delivering these federally funded projects, except in the application of our social equity and contracting policies. All the projects that fall under this ODOT agreement must comply with the Oregon Department of Transportation's disadvantaged business enterprise policy, which is administered by their Office of Civil Rights. The disadvantaged business enterprise policy is subject to findings of routine disparity studies and therefore establish hard target goals for utilization of disadvantaged contractors. And these hard target goals are generally lower than the city's aspirational goals. For this project, the Office of Civil Rights assigned a goal of 12%, and Jess Bucket Excavated exceeded the goal with 42.07 participation, counting themselves, their own certification, as a disadvantaged business enterprise. The state-based certifications do not recognize other certifications other than the disadvantaged business enterprise. Jess Bucket is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I here recommend you authorize this contract.
Very good, colleagues. Any questions on this item?
I have my hand raised, Mayor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Hardesty, thank you. Sorry.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Acting Director. You know, I just wanted to compliment this particular RFP because I've had many conversations with procurement around what used to be just a 5% that was necessary for these federal contracts. And I really want to applaud the Jess Bucket Evacuating Inc. Because they were not limited by the federal government's limited participation for minorities and women-owned firms. I also want to let you know that I'm in conversations at the federal level, because I believe before we start getting recovery packages, it's important that we change this procedure at the federal level. And so I look forward to working with procurement so that we are not limited by the limited thinking of federal contracts. It drives me a little crazy when we have a goal of 20% and traditionally the federal government's goals is 5%. I need more information about why this one actually had a higher goal. And I believe it's because recently they concluded a disparity study. And if that is the case, I'd love to have a copy of that disparity study. This is a movement in the right direction, and I've been challenged by these federal contracts because of the limits that we are able to put pressure on those federal contracts. But if we change this at the front end, at the federal level with the Department of Transportation, at the Transportation Administration at the federal level, we can achieve these goals. And so I'm working on that with our federal congressional partners and hope that we will see action prior to any recovery packages that show up. Just wanted to put that on the record and let you know that this is impressive and we should be impressive more often. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we accept this recommendation as presented.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, second from Commissioner Ryan. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for your comments. I completely, wholeheartedly agree with you, and if there's anything I can do to support your efforts in that way, please count me in at the federal level. Also, thanks to the staff at PBOT and OMF who put many hours into this project. It's a wonderful example of a community project that exceeds minority contracting goals, but also at the same time serves all parts of our community with these kinds of projects. So I really look forward to more of these projects in the future, and I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, I really loved the last two comments made by Commissioner Hardesty and Commissioner Rubio. Not a lot to add except to say a big enthusiastic aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Aye. Next.
Wheeler.
Aye. The report is approved. We'll go back to the time certain, please. Time certain, item 83.
Consider appeal of the Pearl Neighbors for Integrity in Design against the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions Hyatt Place, a 23-story mixed-use building at 350 Northwest 12th Avenue in the Pearl Subdistrict of the Central City Plan District, LU19-145295DZ.
Thank you, colleagues. On January 14th, the council made a tentative decision to deny the appeal. Today, we're back to make a final decision and to adopt findings. Do I have a motion to deny the appeal, uphold the decision of the Design Commission, and adopt the findings?
So moved, Mayor.
Can I get a second?
Yeah, second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Ryan. Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Max.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I want to thank our Design Commission and our city staff who worked very hard to make sure the proposed addition in our central city conforms with city code. I also want to thank those who took the time to testify before the City Council and the Design Commission and write comments into the record. I believe that the city has been very rigorous in its due diligence during this quasi-judicial hearing. It bears repeating. My role is to judge whether the proposed development conforms with the applicable design code. After an additional round of review by the Design Commission and process improvements that emerge from the process, I believe the Hyatt does conform to the applicable requirements. I vote aye, and the ordinance is approved. Thank you. Next, back to the regular agenda, item 88, please, 88.
Accept bid of MJ Hughes Construction, Inc. for the Red Electric Trail project for $2,328,062.
This is a procurement report for another project from the Portland Bureau of Transportation, the Red Electric Trail project. The project is a federal aid transportation project that will construct a pedestrian and bicycle bridge, as well as an off-street trail connection on the segment of the Red Electric Trail from Southwest Bertha Boulevard to Southwest Capitol Highway. Kathleen Brennis-Mora is here to present this report as well. Welcome back.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Kathleen Brennis-Mora, Interim Chief Procurement Officer, and I am here to recommend authorization to enter into a contract with MJ Hughes Construction for construction of the Red Electric Trail project. On July 8th, 2020, Council authorized procurement services to solicit and award a contract with an engineer's estimated cost range between $2 million and $5 million. We issued an invitation to bid on September 28th and received six responsive bids on November 5th. The responsive low bid is from MJ Hughes Construction Incorporated in the amount of $2,328,062. This project was also funded by the Federal Highway Administration under the agreement with Oregon Department of Transportation. The agreement allows the city to follow its own procurement rules for delivering these federally funded projects, except in the application of its social equity contracting policies. This particular project was assessed a hard target goal for utilization of disadvantaged contractors of 8%, and MJ Hughes met the goal with 8.25% participation. The state-based certifications other than disadvantaged business enterprises are not recognized in the federal disadvantaged business enterprise policy that is required for this project. MJ Hughes Construction Incorporated is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I hereby recommend you authorize this contract.
Colleagues, any questions or thoughts? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I move we adopt the ordinance as presented.
Commissioner Hardesty moves. Do I have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Mapp seconds. Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
This project is an example of something I think we could do better. I am really, really, really disappointed in the utilization of minority and women contractors in this contract. As I mentioned earlier, there are limits that we have when it comes to taking federal dollars. And until we fix that, we will never achieve our goals. The city has a very low goal of 20%. The feds put an 8% goal. You know, it's disappointing when we as the city council have voted to center equity and making sure that everything that we do centers BIPOC community members, Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color. And this contract does not do that. I will vote yes because it actually comports to the rules that we currently have, but want to be really clear that this is not equity, and this is not making opportunity available for people who need it. I will vote aye, but I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we change how we do this in the future. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The report is approved. Next item 89, also a report.
Accept bid of West Tech Construction Inc. for the Better NATO Forever project for $2,889,601.
Colleagues, this is a procurement report as well for another Portland Bureau of Transportation construction project, the Better NATO Forever project. The Better NATO Forever project will repurpose one of the two northbound lanes of north of NATO Parkway to create a two-way bikeway and accessible sidewalk along the west side of Waterfront Park. And Kathleen Brennis-Mura is here to present this report as well.
Again, for the record, I'm Kathleen Brennis-Mura, Interim Chief Procurement Officer, and I am here to recommend authorization to enter into a project with West Tech Construction Incorporated for construction of the Better NATO Forever project. On October 7th, 2020, Council authorized procurement services to solicit and award a contract. We issued an invitation to bid on October 12th and received four responsive bids on November 17th. The responsive low bid is from construction in the amount of $2,889,601, approximately 15% below the project estimate of $3.4 million. The city's aspirational 20% subcontractor and supplier utilization goal applied. West Tech has committed to subcontract 8.67% to contractors certified with the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, as identified in the report before you. In determining West Tech's compliance with the social equity requirements, we reviewed documentation of their outreach efforts and validated that they performed extensive outreach to certified business enterprises and complied with all the requirements. West Tech Construction is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I hereby recommend you authorize this contract. I also want to add that Cless Woodward, the Vice President with West Tech, is here this morning and can address any questions regarding their good faith efforts to subcontract with certified firms.
Mayor, if I may, I do have a question about this particular proposal.
Commissioner Hurst.
Thank you, Mayor. It's unique to have a contract in front of us where the prime contractor is subcontracting out 60% of the work. Why is that? That just seems weird to me. That stood out to me. Is there a reason why we would allow a contractor to subcontract 60% of the work? Because they're not, you know, they're not the prime contractor anymore if 60% of the work is being done elsewhere.
So we don't have, unless the work is of specialized nature, a requirement in our specifications that the general contractor must perform, you know, certain percentage of the work. We don't,
because that doesn't make sense to me that we would award a contract and then that person would subcontract it out, the bulk of it out. We need to fix that. I don't think that's a good policy. And if people are able to get through in that manner, we need to fix that.
Okay, that's something that I'm happy to look into.
Very good. Any further questions or discussion on this item? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Going once.
I'll move that we vote on this.
All right. We have a motion. And do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second from Commissioner Rubio. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and vote aye. I do have some questions and concerns, and I appreciate what Commissioner Hardesty brought up. It's just disappointing to see the percentages also for minority contractors as well. Aye.
Keelan, did you call somebody? Keelan?
I was having trouble with my mute. Commissioner Hardesty.
I'm having a hard time with this contract. I am really supportive of the Better NATO Forever program. It is a visionary project. I am very excited that we're going to do this project, but I cannot in good conscience vote to support this contract when I see the very limited number of people of color who will benefit from this contract. I am very concerned that we would allow a prime contractor to sub out 60% of the work, which means that we, in fact, will not have oversight of that other work that's being done as clearly as we should. I am going to vote no on this particular contract.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
So this puts me in a bit of a conundrum. Ordinarily, I would defer to the commissioner in charge on this matter. The commissioner in charge has voted against the acceptance of the project. I will go with the majority because I think this is an important project and it's been in the process for a long time. But I also just want to acknowledge that I'm voting in opposition to the commissioner in charge. So I vote aye. The report is accepted. Number 90, please.
Accept bid of $2,785,180 from Paul Brothers, Inc. for the Gabriel Park Play Area Improvements Project.
Colleagues, this is a procurement report from the Parks Bureau. It's a parks construction project, the Gabriel Park Play Area Improvements Project. The project will build a new, more inclusive and accessible playground at the Gabriel Park and make other improvements to the park, including installing ADA accessible picnic areas, benches, pedestrian pathways, and planting trees, as well as stormwater management basins. Kathleen needs no introduction. Here she is again.
Thanks, Mayor. For the record, I'm Kathleen Brennus-Marua, Interim Chief Procurement Officer. With me is Gary Dotknet, the Capital Project Manager with Portland Parks and Recreation, and we are here to recommend authorization to enter into a contract with Paul Brothers for construction of the Gabriel Park Play Area Improvements Project. I'm gonna start off and provide a summary of the procurement process, then Gary has a presentation he'd like to give about the project itself. On November 4th, 2020, Council authorized procurement services to solicit and award a contract. We issued an invitation to bid on November 23rd and received 7 responsive bids on December 22nd. The responsive low bid is from Paul Brothers Incorporated in the amount of $2,785,180, approximately 11% over the project estimate of $2.5 million. The city's aspirational 20% subcontractor and supplier utilization goal applied. Paul Brothers exceeded the goal with a commitment to subcontract 29% to contractors certified with the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, identified in the report before you. Additionally, Paul Brothers is a certified woman-owned business enterprise and are self-performing approximately 59% of the work. Thus, 88% of the project will be delivered by certified contractors. Since 2017, Paul Brothers has completed 3 other city park improvements projects for a total amount of just over $6 million and consistently has met or exceeded the social equity goals. Paul Brothers Incorporated is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I hereby recommend you authorize this contract.
Unless you have any questions for me, I'll hand it over to Gary.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm going to share.
I think you may have just muted yourself, Gary. There you go.
Hi, hopefully you can see my screen. Thank you, Kathleen. Hello, Mayor Wheeler and members of council. My name is Gary Dadka. I'm a capital project manager with Portland Parks and Recreation. Here today with procurement to request council's authorization to accept the bid for the amount of $2,785,180 from Paul Brothers Construction for the Gabriel Park Play Area Improvements Project. This is a presentation that a few of you have seen last fall before we went out to bid, but we'd like to show again for the new commissioners. My presentation today will share an overview of the project, our community engagement process, and how this project fits in with the larger portfolio of Portland Parks and Rec playgrounds. This project is part of the 2014 Parks Replacement Bond that was generously passed by voters who approved the $68 million bond measure to address critical park needs in seven priority areas without increasing tax rates. This project fits into the playground's focus area and will renovate an existing playground that is outdated, deficient, and in need of replacement. This is the 10th bond playground project to go into construction, filling the commitments made to the voters in 2014. In addition to $1.7 million in bond funding, the project also received $2.5 million from Portland Parks and Rec system development charges, to expand the playground, and $110,000 from the Portland Parks and Rec ADA Transition Plan Program's Major Maintenance General Fund. To address accessibility issues. The total project allocation for this is $4.3 million. With the bond's commitment to replacement, not expansion, the additional system development charges funding has allowed Portland Parks and Rec to amplify the bond investment by providing an expanded inclusive play area that advances the Bureau's goals for providing inclusive play throughout the city. In 2014, PP&R set an aspirational goal to provide one destination playground in each of the city's quadrants. Today we have three inclusive playgrounds. The original Harper's Playground in Arbor Lodge in North Portland opened in 2012. The playground at Gateway Discovery Park opened in 2018 in Northeast Portland, and Cooch Park opened in 2019, just north of the downtown core. This project will be the fourth inclusive playground for Portland, and Gabriel Park is located in Southwest Portland, generally at Southwest 42nd and Southwest Vermont Street near the intersections of the Maplewood, Hayhurst, and Multnomah neighborhoods. Acquired by Portland Parks and Rec in 1950, Gabriel Park is a 90-acre park with recreation opportunities for organized sports, picnicking, gardening, and more. The Southwest Community Center is also located at Gabriel Park. The project is in the northeast corner of the park, as shown here in the red box. There are several existing access points to the play area with main access via the parking lot at the park and from the street parking on Southwest Vermont. Public transportation is also available at 37th and Vermont. Installed in 1998, the existing 3,000 square foot play area has limited play opportunities. The existing equipment does not meet current ADA standards. It lacks in value for collaborative and imaginative play and has ongoing maintenance concerns. Access between the parking lot and restroom has many ADA challenges due to existing grades, and the restroom itself has insufficient accessible interior space. There are several picnic areas near the playground, though none currently meet ADA accessibility criteria, creating equity challenges for all users. This project will address these shortcomings and provide much other needed improvements for the well-used park. During the design for this project, Portland Parks and Rec conducted an extensive community engagement process through a series of five project advisory committee meetings and three community open houses. These meetings helped us understand the current use of the park and also to solicit feedback and gain support for the design of the play area and other community assets. All PAC meetings and one of the community open house meetings were held at Stevens Creek Crossing, a home forward housing facility near Gabriel Park. This approach helped engage and include low-income and renter communities who often have more difficulty attending early evening meetings. The remaining community open houses were held at Southwest Community Center in Gabriel Park. With community input and support, Portland Parks and Rec developed a final design that will construct park improvements focusing on accessible and inclusive play features that challenge all users at their own highest level and allow all users to play and learn together regardless of their abilities. Additional accessible improvements include picnic tables and benches, gathering spaces, drinking fountains, trash receptacles, and much needed bike racks, and accessibility improvements to the ADA parking stalls near the playground and park pathways connecting the park area to the parking area. Play area, existing restrooms, parking spaces on Vermont Street, and including the TriMet stop at 37th and Vermont. PPNR has an anticipated ongoing annual operations and maintenance amount of $13,320 per fiscal year to accommodate the play area size increase to 10,000 square feet and is requested in the fiscal year 2021 budget ongoing. The PTE design consultant team is led by Two Ink Studio Landscape Architects. Through their work, 61% of the $324,000 in contract fees were awarded to state certified business enterprises. The disaggregation of that data for the spending shows 95% of the fees went to DBE and WBE owned businesses, 6% to emerging small businesses. And as procurement stated, 29% of the $2,785,180 in construction fees will be awarded to state certified subcontractors, with 88% overall delivered by state certified contractors. So we're here today to request council authorization to accept the bid for the amount of $2,785,180 from Paul Brothers for the construction of Gabriel Park Play improvements. With the acceptance of this bid by council, construction is set to begin this spring and have an anticipated completion date of winter 2021, early 2022. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Any questions on this item? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move.
Commissioner Mapps moves. Do I have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Ryan seconds. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Mayor Wheeler and the staff at Parks and OMF for all your work on this project. I'm really glad to see the focus on making parks more accessible for all communities. So I'm eager to see this move forward. I do want to just make an observation though, just about everything that we've seen today, this morning, around contracting, also being a new commissioner. And I have a lot of questions about why some projects are wildly successful in minority contracting and while others still need a lot of work. And so I know I'm going to be asking a lot of questions about that and wanting to understand and maybe have more information coming into this so that I am understanding the differences and the nuances concerning each of these contracts and where the barriers lay are so that we can increase that number moving forward. So this was enlightening to me today, and I'm hoping to learn more, and I vote aye on this project.
Ryan.
Yes, Gary, thank you for the presentation. It's actually nice when we get to the procurement phase to be reminded of what the project is. So I appreciate the visuals as well. And it's nice to see it being at 29.01% for the COVID certified firms. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
I am so thrilled that Gabriel Park will be improved and it will be an all user kind of park. I feel very fortunate to have a park very similar in my community in East Portland. It is an absolutely fabulous place to visit. Having said that, as I look at where the subcontracting takes place, the fact that out of an almost $3 million contract, only $55,000 will be enjoyed by a community of color participant, I find this very disappointing. We need to do something better at the front end, so we are not put in a position as a council to support proposals that do not reflect our values. I will be voting no on this particular project because A, I know it will pass anyway, but I hope what I'm doing is putting people on notice that this is just simply not acceptable for us to be contracting and not making these opportunities available for minority and women-owned firms. We can do better, and many of the firms that are continuing to not reach out and engage minority and women-owned firms have been getting contracts from the city for a long, long time. There's really no excuse for them not building those relationships. And honestly, the buck stops with us. There's no excuse why we're not demanding better from the contractors that we are awarding these contracts to. If we as a city have a value system that we say we all own, it should be reflected in everything that we do. I do not see this contract as being reflective of what we promised voters or reflective of what the values are that the city council have adopted. So I will vote no.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I want to acknowledge Commissioner Hardesty's comments, and obviously we need some sort of a stage gate prior to these issues coming back to the full council. We have a work session coming up on procurement, and so I think that'll be a great opportunity for us to talk about what some of those strategies might be, and I certainly look forward to hearing from all of my council colleagues, and I'll have some suggestions as well. Kathleen Brennis, Marua, thank you for being our interim and stepping into the breach here. You've heard Commissioner Hardesty and Commissioner Rubio and others talk about the importance of doing everything we possibly can to ensure that minority participation is improved. And I know you take that call seriously. So it's good that we are having this conversation here today. And I know it's one that we will continue to have. I will support this. I think this is a very important project for the Parks Bureau. I want to acknowledge Commissioner Rubio and her team for their hard work on this. I also want to acknowledge former Commissioner Fritz and her team. They spent a considerable amount of time on this concept. They were determined that this be the latest and greatest example of accessibility for recreational opportunities and parks equipment for all people in the community. And this really is a bold vision. And I think it sets a very, very high bar for future park playground improvements as well. So I'm happy to support it today with that caveat around the contracting issue that I know we're all eager to roll up our sleeves and see some progress on. The report is accepted. Item 91.
Accept the Chief Procurement Officer's report recommending the award of contract for digester cleaning services to Sinagro West LLC for $6,250,000.
Not as glamorous, but just as important, this procurement report is for a contract to provide digester cleaning services for the Bureau of Environmental Services Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. Kathleen, take it away.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Scott Schneider, Procurement Manager.
Thank you.
I'll be delivering this report this morning.
Thank you.
So before you have a procurement report recommending a contract award for digester cleaning services to Sinagro West LLC for a not-to-exceed amount of $6,250,000. On June 2nd, 2020, the city advertised request for proposals 1441, and on July 7th, three proposals were received. All proposals were deemed responsive to the requirements of the solicitation. The city issued a notice of intent to award a contract to Sinagro West LLC on August 7th, and no protests were received. The contractor has a current City of Portland business tax account and is in compliance with the city's contracting requirements. It is not a state certified firm by the Certification Office for the for Business Inclusion and Diversity. The contractor will be subcontracting transportation services to Taylor Transport Inc., a certified women-owned business. If council has any questions regarding the solicitation process, I can answer those. Or Bill Sterling from the Bureau of Environmental Services is here to answer any project specific questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions at this particular point? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that we vote.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner Mapps moves. Can I get a second?
Second.
Commissioner Hardesty seconds. Any further discussion? Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The report's accepted. Thank you. And our last item for this morning, item number 92.
Authorize grant agreement with the Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation for the Disability Leadership Grant Program in amount $112,752.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I am going to turn over the presentation to Director Sukrit V from the Office of Civic and Community and Civic Life. Oh, I believe she's here. You may be muted.
Actually, Commissioner Hardesty will be myself, Tuk Gao, and Andrea Williams presenting.
Well, what a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. I'll go ahead and start off by saying good morning to our members of council. My name is Tuk Gao, as I had mentioned. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I'm the Adaptive Integration Supervisor at Civic Life. The disability program is one of several that I oversee. I just want to say thank you for having myself and my co-presenter, Andrea Williams. We're excited to share Civic Life's Disability Leadership Grant recommendations. And just so you all know, our presentation agenda for today will include the background and purpose of the disability program. The program itself, this grant, we'll talk about our community input as well as our information sessions we've conducted and a presentation of our recommended awardees. Go ahead.
I just asked, is all that going to be done in 15 minutes?
Oh yeah, we're going to be able to cover it. We timed ourselves, I promise you that.
Okay. I was just checking. Thank you.
Absolutely.
A lot longer. I appreciate
it. Absolutely. We timed it, so we'll try to keep it under 10, I promise. And I'll try to limit my amount of jokes, which I keep telling Andrea that, but I can't make promises. But yeah, so just so you all know, we'll cover the background, we'll cover the purpose, and we'll certainly cover our community input within a timely manner. And then just so you all know, my colleague Andrea will cover the recommended awardees and the details behind that. So we'll go ahead and move on to the next slide if you all are ready for that. But first, we really wanted to acknowledge our former colleague, Joanne Johnson, who did so much work to get us to where we are today. After 4 years with Civic Life as our disability coordinator, Joanne transitioned to the Water Bureau at the beginning of February, where she serves as their accessibility analyst. Our bureau was privileged enough to work with Joanne Johnson while she's still working within the city. I just feel like it's really important for us to share with you all what she's contributed to the program as well as our bureau. I want to include that she created our citywide access tips, a platform for citywide employees and community to find ways to create accessible spaces to learn and reflect specifically on our positionality while, in my opinion, very importantly incorporated pictures of cute baby animals, while also including our bi-monthly, twice a month newsletter disability news, which centered on our disabilities communities for events, grants, groups, and community-centered resources. I also wanna mention, because this work was not limited to just those aspects, that she also advised other bureaus on disability policy and practices while partnering with OEHR and BHR on Resolution 37517 to adopt citywide disability equity goals. This also includes our launch of our first ever research project with Portland State University and Real Choice on the disability community and their civic engagement. We're hoping that this study will be concluded by June of 2021. And also with this specific grant, she led on the design of our disability leadership grants, which included our outreach, which meant many like one-on-one phone calls, many follow-ups, engagement activities, and selection processes. So I do want to acknowledge, in addition to that development of the program, that like many of us or all of us, so many changes occurred when COVID-19 hit. And I feel like a part of the disability program and as well as Joanne's work was to ensure accessibility for all within our city of Portland. This included our ASL as well as translation, and also adding the Emergency Coordination Center to the program's plate, which I want to add, this was not a small feat for those participating in the ECC Now or JVIC, because in this sense, adding the ECC meant ensuring folks had access to PPE. So if we can go on to the next slide, I do want to add that this includes a much more focus of what was developed in our disabilities program. So we have here in 2017 and 2018, Civic Life's disability program ran the Disability Power PDX leadership cohort. DP2 offered trainings, skill building, and practical experiences for people with disabilities who wanted to affect public policy and become more engaged in Portland's communities. This included a series of workshops, individual learning opportunities, and meetings with local organizations to increase their knowledge of local engagement opportunities and the ability to effectively engage in Portland's civic life. Members learned about disability identity and culture while accessing community resources and navigating local and national government. At the end of this leadership program, cohort participants, along with other members, called on Civic Life to support a next step to resource organizations and grassroots groups to continue capacity building efforts among people with disabilities. From here, the idea of the disability leadership grants were born. So in the next slide, we'll cover the purpose of the grants. After DP2 or Disability Power PDX, and of course with the impacts of COVID-19, Joanne and our Civic Life team worked on a grant concept to reflect community feedback. The Disability Leadership Grants provides up to $10,000 per project to support the work that offers concrete ways for people with disabilities to engage in local government and their communities. The priority funding areas included strengthening community capacity, increasing community impact on public decisions, and increasing and diversifying engagement within communities themselves. The main focus of this grant is for folks or people with disabilities, disability communities, and disabled people who hold intersectional identities. This includes, which is also not limited to, those that are Black, Indigenous, as well as people of color, LGBTQ+, those that are houseless, immigrants, or migrants and refugees, and mainly those who wanted to grow in disability-led efforts within their communities. The grant itself was publicly announced October 19th and closed on November 16th of 2020. And so in the next slide, we'll talk about our community-centered input. So I think we can collectively say that we know that a lot of change can occur when it's community-led. And to ensure our grant concept actually would build capacity for communities, we held two listening sessions prior to launching the grant that included ASL captioning and tactile interpretation. And I do just wanna make a quick note that I'm often stressing this because I do feel like it is important when we have any sort of community-centered events that we have these available so that we can inherently include those that may be needing those additional accessibility needs. And so with that, I do wanna add that we engaged with 45 people representing many different organizations, which also included those identified as Black, Indigenous, or POC, as well as LGBTQ+, migrants, refugees, and members of the houseless community. We collected the feedback specifically about the grant and then did our best to make improvements. Once the requests for grant applications were announced in October, we then, to further support and build capacity for possible applicants, held an additional information sessions so folks that could understand the processes and procedures before applying for the grant, while also allowing space for Q&A. So I'm gonna take a drink of water and also say I'd like to pass it to Andrea to share on our recommended grantees.
Thank you, Tuck, and good morning, members of council. I'm Andrea Williams. I'm the partnerships manager at Civic Life. And I have the pleasure and honor of sharing Civic Life's recommended awardees for the Disability Leadership Grants. As you can see on the slide, we have recommended 10 different projects that were recommended by our review panel, ranging from $9,000 to $10,000 each for a subtotal of $98,045. This slide summarizes each of the organizations with a short description of each of the funded projects. And later on in the presentation, should you be curious, there's a longer description of each of the funded projects. We've also allocated about 13% of the total budget, $14,707, to the McKenzie River Gathering Foundation. Due to a temporary staffing gap with the recent transition of our disability program coordinator at the end of January, we are partnering with the MRG Foundation to distribute these grants. The MRG Foundation will act as the fiscal agent of this grant program. They are an Oregon-based 501c3 nonprofit organization with decades-long history and track record of grant making to small social justice and community-led organizations. We decided to partner with them because they are values and mission aligned with Civic Life and the City of Portland and have the staff capacity, grant making experience, technical knowledge, and community trust necessary to serve as the fiscal agent of this grant program. And briefly, I wanted to share a little bit of the analysis that the review panel went through in making their recommendations. An important part of the grant selection process was intersectionality. As Took mentioned, we encouraged applicants from disability-focused organizations and also organizations centered on other communities who want to grow disability-led efforts within their communities. These include BIPOC organizations, LGBTQ, immigrant, refugee, and youth, most notably. The review panel consists of three Civic Life staff members selected by the Disability Program Coordinator, and they considered a variety of factors in selecting applicants. They asked questions like, was the applicant a good match with our priority funding areas? Are they led by communities impacted by inequities, such as BIPOC, immigrant, refugee, youth, and LGBTQ people? And most importantly, are they led by people with disabilities, given that this is a disability leadership grant program? And this chart shows you some of their analysis here, and it tells us that 100% of the projects are led by and serve people with disabilities, that 60% are led by and serve BIPOC communities, 40% are led by and serve youth, 30% with immigrant and refugees, and 20% are led by and serve LGBTQ communities. So with that, that concludes our presentation, and we're happy to answer any questions that council might have.
Well done and well within the time allotted. Great job.
All right, anybody have any questions at this point?
Mr. Mayor, I do have a question.
Mingus, Commissioner Mapps, thank you.
Sure. I want to thank our panelists for that important presentation. I'm really happy to see this work done. I also have a question. We seem to, for some of these grants, we seem to have two fiscal sponsors. It seems like MRG is sort of the master fiscal sponsor, but I think a couple of the grantees have additional fiscal sponsors. Can you give me some intuition around what that means?
Yeah, I'm happy to briefly answer that question. So some of these, we were really focused on making sure that we could fund smaller organizations, organizations that maybe were new to partnering with the city. And sometimes that means they don't have a 501c3 nonprofit status. And so in those two instances, they didn't have that status. The city requires that. And also working with a foundation, they also require that the nonprofit that they work with or the project they work with have 501c3 fiscal sponsorship. And so really that was the intent, was to work with sort of first time new partnerships, small grassroots led organizations. And we asked them to please find a fiscal sponsorship. And in addition to that, the foundation requires that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, I have a brief question.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that presentation. It was very thorough. I'm just curious on how we'll know if they were successful in what they say they will do with their awards. So can you give me the feedback loop on the results?
Go ahead, Andrew. Oh, we can both go, but I'll add, and then of course, if Andrew wants to add to it, we asked within our application, we were very transparent in that we had a small ask of the report. We wanted to make it as accessible and barrier-free, and so we just asked them to come back to us and let us know what did the event look like, because as we're building capacity, it felt important specifically as a city structure not to add additional barriers. Andrea, if there's anything you wanted to add to that, please.
Yeah, at the end of the grant cycle, we will receive a report from the MRG Foundation, who will work with each of the grantees to report back on what their successes were. In addition, we plan to maintain a direct relationship with these grantees as well. We kind of envisioned a cohort model where we get to check in with them to see how things are going and, you know, really learn from this grant program, because it is the first time that our disability program is running a grant process. And so we do plan to check in with the partners kind of midway through the grant cycle.
Thank you. I appreciated that. I just hope that we have the wall down so that we can really connect with one another and in real time make improvements. So this is the process. Thanks.
Very good. Any further questions before we move to testimony? Keelan, do we have any public testimony?
We do. We have one person on the call to testify. Excellent. Judith Wild.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, I'm really glad to hear this report. What they're doing is so needed. And I'm also glad to hear that the project includes houseless people. And I just want to mention that I am a resident of the Overlook neighborhood, and I have been involved with Hazelnut Grove. And there are people with disabilities there, and the this self-governed community has been incredibly supportive of people with disabilities, both mentally and physically. And this community has been watched not just by Portlanders, but people from around the country. And in fact, the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy made a documentary about land use in several cities and held Hazelnut up as an innovative good use of land. Now, they are under threat of being swept. And if they are, this will be a terrible tragedy, because people that live there have had so much support and help that they wouldn't have if they were thrown out as individuals into different separate situations. Also, this getting rid of Hazelnut would be damaging not just to the people that live there, but to the whole community of Overlook, because Overlook depends on them to make sure there are no fires in that area. They're helping, they're being helped by the fire bureau, the fire marshal, and they, excuse me for a minute. Also, they ensure that there's safety there in terms of crime. The crime rate has gone down in the neighborhood. And for people with disabilities, this is so important, because there is so much violence against people with disabilities. So to live in a community where they are protected is extremely important. So I just want to say that the Neighborhood Association has been trying to get rid of them. This would be disastrous for people that live there. And I really encourage this project to work with Hazelnut Grove and help them survive. Thank you.
Thank you. Keelan, any further? Commissioner Hardesty.
Mayor, I will wait until you ask Keelan if there's anyone else. I have a motion to make.
Keelan, is there anybody else signed up, or is it just the one individual?
Just the one individual.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Judah, for your testimony. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we add an emergency clause so that we can get these funds out the door as quickly as possible.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty to add an emergency clause. We have a second from Commissioner Ryan. Any further discussion? Call the roll on the amendment.
Rubio?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye. The amendment's Wheeler? Adopted to the main motion. Any further discussion, comments, questions? Seeing none, please call the roll on the main motion as amended.
Rubio?
Thank you so much for the presentation, because it's so important to demonstrate what centering community looks like for folks who haven't seen that in action before, as well as its application via policy. So I want to appreciate you for doing that today for us. I'm also very happy to support this really underserved community. And this is a great opportunity to partner with MRG Foundation. Very excited to see that. It's such a respected organization, and Seattle is doing an amazing job of bringing in community. So I happily vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Civic Life, for that great presentation. I think it's smart that you're partnering with McKinsey River Gathering so we can get these much needed grants out as soon as possible. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you so much for that very succinct and detailed presentation. Thank you so much for centering our communities with disabilities and reminding us that disabilities are in all of our communities. And so I like to say that we're all just temporarily able. So I am thrilled to support these grants, and I appreciate the creativity. Because normally when we lose a grant writer, we kind of scratch our heads for a while. So I appreciate reaching out to MRG, who I've been a big fan of for quite some time. And I know that they will be excellent partners because, as you said, they share our values. Happy to vote aye.
Maps.
Like my colleagues, I want to thank Civic Life staff for this presentation and congratulate everyone over at Civic Life who helped pull this project together, including Director Ree and Joanne Johnson. I'd like to recognize and thank the MRG Foundation for their help in getting these dollars out to our community. I vote aye.
Mueller.
Happy to support. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted as amended. Thank you all. And we are adjourned until 2 p.m.